भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। ओके सो someone will be reading today.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu
Hare
can
Krishna.
read. Actually, my book is gave it to yesterday somebody, and then I couldn't take a new book. I didn't get the book
Aha.
back.
I see. So you're appreciating Jagadish Prabhu's reading. Is that the purport?
Yeah.
Well, he just left, so he doesn't seem to be overly impressed. He came back.
No, I just got my glasses.
Oh, I see. I thought it was when he heard that you were reading and you walked out that this is.
No, I'm reading straight from my phone because I don't have the book. But let me find the file. One second. It seems that there are quite a few verses. Basically, we go through the verses and the explanation.
Yeah, no, they'll
of
quote
the
a
verses.
lot of verses. Also, even in, what's it? Remember seeing one. I mean, the original, I think, translation before the BBT one, for the Brihad Bhagavatamrita in the 90s that I had. Then it was just verse after verse after verse quoting from Bhagavatam. So many verses. So that's the fun part, is there's so much evidence.
Okay, I think I found the place.
Okay.
It's on the Well, at least in my version of the book, it's on the page 16.
Okay.
Therefore, Sri Krishna is the karmadi mulam, or the cause of all work. Ha u refers to such words that are sung in the Vedas. All works, including Nitya, Naimitika, and Kamya, have already been explained previously. Adi refers to the essence of all activities, such as worship of Ganesh and other demigods and secondary devas. Worship of the forefathers and austerities, penances, sacrifices, homas, charity, vows, etc. There's no doubt that by the worship of Krishna, one receives the full benefit of all these works. Krishna is Kasamkrit Abhusa Mukha Prabhu Ujaha. He is worshipable by all the chief devatas, Prabhu, headed by Kasam Krida Brahma Ka, Vishnu A, and Shiva, Samkrita. Adi refers to the sons of Brahma. Such as the four Kumaras, Marichi, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, Vasishta, Daksha, Narada, and Svayambhuva Manu. As well as those entities produced from the wombs of devatas, rishis, prajapatis, men, munis, and the immobile entities as well. Isha refers to the Vishnu forms in this world, and Mukha means the origin. They include the three Vishnu forms and incarnations such as Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Nrisimha, Vamana, Rama, Parashurama, Balarama, Buddha, and Kalki, and Narayana situated in the spiritual sky. All of these lords are worshipping Krishna of Goloka Dhamma. Krishna is thus worshipable by all beings inside and outside of the material universe. By pleasing Krishna with suitable worship, a person attains the most auspicious results possible within or outside the universe.
Yeah, you see that because all the qualities, whatever there are, they're all in Krishna. And all these qualities then, and we see then his Rup Shakti has the natural complement to all those qualities. So you have it, the quality itself is the impersonal aspect, but the dynamic of how the quality interacts, between individuals, and how that affects the situation, and then it affects the interaction of everybody, what actions are performed, that those all then become the how Krishna controls, and then the personal aspect. So ultimately means we have the dynamic of the situations that they exist. We have the actions you can perform in those situations. And then we have the interactions between the Lord and the devotees based on rasa. So but the qualities are the point at which it does. A situation, you call it that it's good for something because of the particular qualities present. When you apply endeavor, it's working with qualities. And the result you're trying to get will have qualities. And the result that you get, then that will be, shared with others, individuals, based on the natural dynamic between those individuals. So there's not going to be, qualities are the central feature here. All these qualities rest in Krishna's sarup, his nature. And so then when they're just expanding just for the existential element, that's the impersonal, though it's full, it exists and it's full of qualities. But because they're not dynamic, it's called impersonal. But then when it takes on the qualities of action, where someone is taking the situation, applying it with knowledge to get a particular result, right? Then we'll say then that's the aspect of the control of something, the manipulation of something. And so then that's expanding from the Paramatma feature. Then we see is that that whole situation and the activities and the result then will be the basis of interaction between the Lord and the living entities based on those qualities. So then you're going to have, that's going to bring out the pastimes, the Bhagavan feature. So all these aspects are centered around the qualities, because if there's no qualities, what's the meaning of something? If something doesn't have any qualities, it doesn't exist. It exists because there's qualities. And it exists because the qualities it has are unique. So then Krishna being the source of all qualities, everything is connected with him. Everything's coming from him. Depending upon which combination and which proportions, and which I think would be like intensity and all these different aspects that are there to to measure something by, then those things, when they're manifest, they take on a particular nature. Right? So depending upon that nature, even though it's all part of a greater picture, then when it's all together, it has one flavor. And when it's a manifest in a particular form, then it takes on other flavors. Even though it's the same qualities, it's like, let's say you have a house. So in the house, then you have all the rooms, all the facilities, all the furniture, everything is in the house. So the house has one flavor, right? And it can function, and the house means anything can go on in all the different places that are there. So you have one set of persons that move through the whole house. They have a particular mood with each other. Does that make sense? So you have, let's say, family members, or let's say you have the husband and wife, you know, and that they can move in any of the rooms, and they have relationships in all the rooms, but it's the same relationship. The rooms just give it slightly different flavors because of the facility. So different opportunities for different actions and interactions, you know, as the children are there, then they also take part. And so they move through and all that. They add a different, flavors to all these things. But it doesn't mean that because they're there, that there still isn't the same relationship between the husband and wife as you add. And so therefore, then there'll be their time together. You know, after the children go to sleep, then the parents can sit and talk and interact, you know, like this. So the kids are out, you know, whatever. Now, let's say you have friends over. Right. So then they're going to come in. They're not going to move anywhere. They'll be in the living room, dining room, you know, bathroom. But they're not like taking a bath and doing all their, you know, how you say, hygienic and cosmetic elements there. It's just it has one flavor. Them being in the living room, it has a flavor. It has that more formality, or a little bit less if it's more close friends like that. But they don't go everywhere. Right? It might be relatives, so they come in and then there's a program or something's happening, so they might stay the night or use a little bit more or this and that. But it's not theirs, so it has a particular flavor than the family. Right? And then let's say you have some over a very formal kind of thing, then it's even more restricted. Or maybe you have a good friend over, but that good friend, you do certain activities, so you might be in the den or in the garage or out in the back or, you know, something like that. And, you know, that's where those activities go. They don't happen, let's say, in the main part of the house when the family is there. You know, so even though it's the same person, when you're dealing with those friends, then, you know, you go in the garage and talk about making things and this and that and whatever you're going to do, fixing the car. Like that, but you don't discuss those things inside. It's known the car will be fixed. This will get done by the family, but it's not part of that relationship. That the ability there that does done and it does happen, that'll be there. But the details of it, that's happening with other people. So therefore, Krishna, then depending upon the qualities and who he's with, therefore, there's particular situations for that. So then we see it as all these completely different avatars and incarnations and all that, that they're just portions of portions of portions of Krishna's, of his qualities. So how much they manifest, even though all the qualities are there, but you only manifest that much. Just like, let's say the husband, he has his good friend over. And so, how much qualities he has that he manifests that he works with the whole house is not there. He only manifests a certain portion because he only deals in a certain place, right? And so therefore, you'll see a certain part of that. So it's an expansion of the mood. And then also the intensity. Some friends might be more intense and go more deep. Some it'll be more formal or superficial or different things like that. So depending upon that intimacy or that closeness or that dependency or that mood of respect, you know, or some kind of aspect, then you'll see these different flavors come up. And so that way you get all the different incarnations. So they're all Krishna. Therefore, when Jayadeva Goswami, he's pointing out Keshavadrita Nadahari Rupa, Keshavadrita Meena Sharira, Keshavadrita Kurma Sarupa, like this. Was it Kachapi Rupa? Yeah. So then all these different aspects, then it's the same Krishna. It's just that these different moods. So there is only one person. But we have to understand is that one person where he manifests fully his natural nature, his natural full sarup, that's Krishna in Vrindavan. So therefore, if you're worshiping him, all other forms of worship of the Lord, everything else is already taken care of. You don't have to worry about anything else. There's no real need. You know, if there's some affection for other forms and this and that, like you see how the Das Avatar and the Sringadeva is the only one that we really spend any time on a regular basis worshiping. You know, so that aspect there is that you know, there'll be particular aspects, because as we see as Nrisimhadeva is Nanda Baba's deity in Krishna's house. You know, so they're all going to be, you know, cooking and offering and Nrisimhadeva and everything like that. So all that will be going on. So then, you know, he's very much part of the scene there. So we should we can appreciate that. Therefore, worshiping, and then that's Vishnu Murtis. Then you have, when you expand as the, you know, the devatas, the rishis, and all these others. So they'll have particular moods and all that of the Lord also, qualities also. But they're even be less, more reduced. You know, and they're, you know, yeah. So therefore, then, if it's the same of worship of Krishna in Vrindavan, then it takes care of all the worship of any other expansion of the Lord. Then, let alone the demigods, you know, and all the other aspects of the universal form as Krishna expands and everything, the parents, the friends, the, you know, pet, you know, whatever is there. It doesn't, if you worship Krishna, that's already taken care of. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. I just have a question.
Yes,
because
please.
It's mentioned here that all of these lords are worshiping Krishna of Golok Dham.
Yes.
Do we have any place where it's mentioned in the Shastra? Because I remember in Bhagavatam how demigods worship in Krishna, but I don't remember other forms of the, like Vishnu Murtis worshiping Krishna of Golok Dham.
Well, you have that aspect where it's talking about, you know, where Prabhupada's talking about Balaram as the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead.
Hmm.
You know, so you're going to have all those different aspects. And you also see all those Vishnu Murtis that Krishna expanded as, they all came and they were also worshiping Krishna and Vrindavan, you know, in the Brahma Vimahan Lila. So, you know, and all living entities of the universe. So you're always going to have that aspect. That's why we're doing, you know, is that's what's being thought of. Like when Krishna's in Dwarka, like we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he's talking about, because he's away from the Brajvasis and all that, then he doesn't, you know, he doesn't play his flute and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel inspired. That Udipan is not there to take up and manifest all those qualities and all that. So even there, you know, these, as Krishna expands, then even there, thinking of Krishna and that service to Krishna and everything like that. Because even is there, why is Mahavishnu making the creation? This is Krishna's desire to bring the living entities. So in that way, Krishna as Mahavishnu is serving Krishna.
Hmm.
You know, Krishna and Dwarka is serving Krishna and Vrindavan. Because if there's just Radha and Krishna together and that's all there is, it's going to be very ecstatic. But it won't have the depth. And it won't have that increasing, ever increasing in such a dynamic way, is if you're going to have the element of separation. So therefore, Krishna being born in Mathura and having that connection with the Yadu dynasty, that there's always going to be that aspect. So we see the Mathura Dwarka, you know, the whole of Sweta Dweep is just an expansion of Vrindavan. You know, Navadweep is an expansion of Vrindavan. So they all add to the flavor that is there. And then we see is that he does all these different pastimes, you know, tastes all these different aspects. So they're going to be, all those wonderful things are there with his devotees and the taste. But at the same time, as we see, all that goes back to Vrindavan. Because they're always regularly referring, you know, from the Vedic literatures to Krishna's different pastimes and this and that. And comparing, you know, and comparing them and doing all these things just to bring out some interesting conversation with Krishna. Is that?
Yes, thank you very much, Mark.
Because it's a mood. It doesn't have to be that, you know, he's there standing and doing the artic and ringing the bell. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could just see it's like, you know, that eight-armed form of Narayan who came, I think, to that Prithu Maharaj, the sacrifice. I mean, he could offer the whole artik at one shot. You know, one hand with the bell, one with the incense, one with the lamb, one with the camphor lamp, one with the water, one with this. It could happen all at once. So, yeah. So it's a mood. It's a mood. But they all feel that sense of service because he's expanded to do all these things. So even that expansion of him is him, but at the same time, there's a unique mood. And so then they see that as service. You know, I mean, it's just like, let's say you're sitting on your couch. Okay. You got you're relaxing and all that. And then you're thinking, okay, be nice to have something to drink. But, you know, instead of you having to get the drink, you expand and you go and get the drinks. Right? But it will be in the mood of serving you, even though it's you. Right? It won't look good if you then comes back to the couch, sits down and, you know, leans back and, you know, hey, what's happening? And all, you know, it would be a distraction. You know what I'm saying? So therefore that aspect is there and that it stays like that. It just is to assist. So at the same time as it's unique mood, but it's still the same person. So it's a very, it may not make as much sense to us, but that's not actually a big problem because we're not like that. And so therefore these are the unique features of God. He is unique. He is who he is. I mean, isn't that what he says in the Bible? I am who I am, right? So, you know, it's just at the bottom line, that's the way it is. Accept it or not, but that's the way it is. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that means all others, just like Radha Partasarathi, you know, the deities in Delhi. That means Krishna in on the chariot while he's driving the chariot. How much potency does it take of his? He's creating, expanding, maintaining, creating, destroying all the universes. How much of his potency does it take to drive a chariot? Right? If he is who he is, so what's he thinking about? You know, I mean, he's also thinking about Arjuna and all the things in that pastime unfolding. But here, then Prabhupada reveals that he's thinking of his pastimes as Radharani and Vrindavan while he's driving the chariot. Therefore, Radha Partasarathi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then these are the uniquenesses that are there.
Okay.
Okay.
So continue reading.
Please.
It is understood that by this worship of Krishna, Kriti, the devotee, though omitting service to devatas, does not suffer any loss. The surrendered, discriminating devotee absorbed in the Lord attains all that could be desired. Yam mangalam tal labhate kriti. Skanda Purana. After citing the Narayana Upanishad, Gopal Bhatta gives a second proof forbidden worship of devatas and pitris for Vaishnavas. As stated in Skanda Purana, Reva Kanda, I'll skip the Sanskrit, if one is initiated into the holy name of Lord Vishnu, then one should avoid sankalpa, dana, worship of forefathers and demigods, not wear kusa.
Means that means those kusa rings, you know, you do the figure eight knot in the rings. Because it's a standard thing when you do yajnas and these kind of things, you put them on, you know, the two, one on each on the two fingers and like that and that. So we used to use those until we came across that we don't do this. When Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur pointed that out, even have that they make silver rings that have the figure eight knot on it. You know, if you don't have kusa, then they have a silver ring or something that they put like that. So then, you know, we don't, well, there's no need for us to do. Because what they're doing, it's pious, but it doesn't have the purity to maintain the purity of the soul. So the more pure the environment, the better. So they use all these things. We just use the standard things that are, you know, the cultural aspects and all that.
Yeah, it's interesting how from, you know, basically what we hear nowadays, it's not recommended, the worship of the demigods. But here it says it's actually prohibited.
Yeah, no, it's forbidden. We don't.
Yeah.
But it's always, we like to push the law. Whatever is like this, one has to appreciate is that whatever you're not supposed to do, or what is difficult to obtain, what is rare, that's what the feminine nature is attracted to. Right? You know, it's just like platinum. What do you do with platinum? It doesn't look good. Silver looks just as good. But because it's rare, therefore, then you can put the thing, oh, it's rare, it's worth more. But if push comes to shove, then it's going to be gold, you know, that you'd use. You know, so like that, it's just that you have these things that's rare. You can't do it, you have to do it. As soon as you can do it, is anybody doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the fight for giving class in Mayapur. Big, big hullabaloo all over the movement. You know, people on strike, walking out, this, that. Paper. And then it's okay. How many are fired up and they give? You know, it's not a regular thing because now you can do it. It's standard. Now you have to do it. You're on a list. So every week you have to be there. I don't want to be there. You know what I'm saying? So like yeah. That, it's only when you don't have it. But once you get it, then it's not rare anymore. Therefore, that's why the next thing, the next. So in the pastimes of Krishna, that works out very nice because it'll create unlimited variety and it constantly, constantly just moving. That the situations will adjust, you know, even just a fraction. Like it says, Radharani doesn't cook the same preparation twice. That means the subtleties and how it's adjusted and all these. There's unlimited things you can do. You know, it's just like you say, let's say you have the Vedic music. And so there's seven notes, you know, but that within the rag, a particular movement in the notes. But with that, you can get unlimited melodies. And so it can go on and on and on like that. It's not that, oh, you're going to run out of Vedic metal and melody, so now we're going to have to go to grunge or something, you know? It has unlimited. It's just like the cooking. It has these things. So many elements are there, and you can do unlimited things with it. And it still may be the same preparation, but it's slightly adjusted and this and that. So it's not gross at all. So you can get this unlimited aspect. You know, it's just like you see is with the man, then something that you like to eat, you could eat it whenever, you know, like that. But then, you know, the few times of that, it's really nice because it's a really great prep. But then let's say the opportunity comes up again. And so the man says, hey, yeah, we could eat this. The women go, no. Why? Because we already ate that so many times in the last month. So it's like, you know, forget it. We're not eating it for another 6 months. You understand? So variety, the feminine nature generates this variety in the interaction, in the relationship, in the taste. And so it works perfectly in the spiritual platform, you know, like that. But then we see is that that regularity and all that's not there. So that's what we have to see, is that it has to be in context of Krishna. So what Krishna likes, and Krishna doesn't like these other aspects. Well, how is it pleasing Krishna worse than a demigod? You can say, oh, but they're Vaishnavs, and are we respecting the Vaishnavs in the community? Do we respect Siksha Gurus? You know, is that going on? Are we respecting the parents, senior devotees? Is that all going on? Respecting parents and teachers and elders and all? No. So why would you add in something when you're not even doing properly? That's like trying to create variety in cooking and you can't even make a chance properly. Every time you cook, you burn it. So then, you know, what's the point of the variety? You know, most burnt. You know, complete charcoal, you know, this time it caught on fire. Wow. What color was the flame? Well, it's a little bit blue this time. Wow. I got a yellow and red one. Oh, I got to try that. You know, so yeah. So we're going out into these other things when there's absolutely no need. So it's forbidden. That's what it is. It's forbidden. It's just, we say it in nice language. It's not recommended. It means we don't do it. But we have to push the envelope because, you know, it's something new and things like that. So the jiva, being feminine, it has a tendency to do stuff like this. So therefore, the only thing to regulate it is relationship. So that relationship with Krishna, that regulates it. And how do we know Krishna? Is through the spiritual master and the parampara. So when they say it's not done, it's not done. So all those people who go to demigods for this and that, they're fools. And we're saying fools, like the acharyas say it's not recommended. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, fool doesn't even begin to, you know, describe it. So that's the whole thing, is that though we have to do, oh, it's different. There must be something there. They're saying restricted because they're cheating us. You know, it's got to be something we can. No, it's not like that. It's that it has no purpose or value for us. So therefore, that's why we don't do. That's why it's not done. So, you know, and the whole point is you can say is, oh, but you know, we see that, you know, the Madhvas, Shris absolutely, they don't. I mean, if there's a demigod temple, they'll walk around to avoid it. They will have zero to do with demigods. Absolutely. Madhvas will deal. They'll be respectful, because Madhvacharya pointed out is all the demigods, when it says Indra, it means Vishnu. When it says Varuna, it means Vishnu. When it says Yama or Brahma, it means Vishnu. It's just those different potencies of Vishnu and how he manifests them and all that. That's what you're dealing with. So they don't have a completely like a phobia of them, but the Shris do. They completely stay away. So it's not that it's a strange thing. So the only ones that get involved with anybody and everybody are just the Hindu Bindus, which are not sampradayic, and they're just the mental speculation. So picking up all this demigod worship and that didn't come from any of the four sampradayas. Doesn't come from Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That comes from just material consciousness and material desire. That's all. You know, it's like the Hindus are bogus, right? They're just a bunch of nonsense and this and that, till we figure it out that I want money and they make money, and so I can get money by doing what they do. But otherwise, before you figure out money, it means why are they worshiping demigods? Why would devotees do that? You know, for the health, for the money, for, you know, marriage, for this and that, just on the material platform. But the point is since all those potencies for those demigods come from Krishna, by worshiping Krishna, then that was what was pointed out by the Acharya. Skandapurana is that you don't have, you get all the benefits of that anyway, since you're dealing, let's say, with a demigod who has this, you know, like a, you know, like let's say, just like, just for example, a billionth portion of a part of that potency of Krishna, but you're dealing with Swayam Krishna, who has 100% manifest of that, and then which is going to give more result? I have an unlimited ocean, and I have a fraction of a portion of a drop. So you want to take a bath, or you're thirsty, you want to cook, which are you going to go to? So if you have a brain, then you go like this. You can say, oh, don't be so harsh. And that just comes down to, I'm the controller and enjoyer. I don't want to be told what to do. That's all. So anything you're not supposed to do, we want to do. Anything you should do, we won't do. Now, according to Bhagavad Gita, that's called the mode of ignorance. So in other words, because the mode of ignorance has been cultivated and has become prominent now, therefore devotees think worshiping demigods is all right. Oh, you know, and they'll somehow or another say it's for Krishna, but isn't. Right? No, not from a background. I can understand somebody from a Hindu background might think like that, but anybody from any other background, why would they? They only learned about them from coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada. And then he and the acharya say, don't do it. So why would you think it's all right? You know, it's like somebody's from a Hindu family, they go home for a wedding and this and that, and they're all going to the temple, you know, since like before the worship, going to the Durga temple to take blessings before the marriage. And you go along because you happen to be the brother of the bride. And so, yeah, you're there and do all, what do you do like that? But you're only doing because, you know, these things are there. And so you're just doing it because that's the duties in that family relationship. But it's not like, and you see how they're servants of Krishna and all that. So it works out. You wouldn't use it as the first thing. You could worship Krishna. Why would you go through this medium? Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that because it it's just, you want it to be done, but then if they get into it and it's all right to do, then they're going to see is that it still doesn't give them the result they want. Because if you get materialistic, the goalposts always keep moving. How much you have, the goalpost is far. Let's say what you want to get to is 100 feet away. As you move towards it, your goal keeps moving 100 feet. Doesn't matter. The billionaire wants 100 billion. The 100 billionaire, he wants a trillion. Trillionaires want, you know, quadrillion. It's no end. There is absolutely no end. That's the way it is. Because everything's unlimited in the variety. But the thing is for the soul, since we're dealing with the temporary, they'll be unsatisfied. So as soon as they go there, the demigods, it's all right. And then they worship. They're not getting what they want. They'll start changing demigods, changing processes, getting into tantra, giving it up and just going into gross materialism, or, you know, who knows, you know, like that. So the point is worship Krishna and everything works out. And if you're not getting it, it's because you're not supposed to get it. That's all. It's that simple. If you're not getting it, means it's not going to be good for you. It's as simple as that. Or not getting it is good for you. This whole thing is that all desires are satisfied the way I want them. No, it's how you should get. Just like the child, he wants, you know, if you brought out, you know, a million, you know, gummy bears or something like that and just put this huge pile in the middle of the floor and they could go there, roll around in it, throw it around the room, feed it to the dogs, you know, throw it at the birds out the window, you know, like that, call their friends and they could have a war and at the same time eat it and wipe their hands all over everything. That's what they would want to do. Is the parents going to allow that to happen? No, because is it going to be good for him and his consciousness and his personal development? No. So therefore, he gets however many gummy bears he gets, and that's it. You know, on certain occasions, at certain times, in certain situations. But otherwise, up the kid, middle of Mongol Arctic, you know, he wants to eat pizza. You know, he wants to take a nap. He wants to play games and run around. No. You don't. You learn what to do at what time and what situation. So that's the thing, is people don't want to be restricted. Just because they're adults doesn't mean that they don't have the same anarthas. If they weren't removed as a child, they'll still be there. So therefore, then they're going to do the same thing. But now that they're an adult, they seem to think it's more mature, when actually it's quite childish. Why, when the acharya says, don't do this, you have to do this? Who does that? Where does that come from? Kids do that. The dog does that. You know? That's who does it. And it's that, no, it's not your duty. You don't do this. Okay, I should do my duty. That's the thing. No, but people aren't looking at duty. They're looking at where can I get benefit? They're not looking at duty at all. Is it their duty to worship demigods? Where does it say for a Vaishnava it's their duty to worship the demigods? Where? No place. So why would they do it? So someone in the mode of goodness, it's my duty, I wouldn't do this. So therefore, it's a fault. If they get distracted by this, it's because other modes come up. So they're not thinking it. When you point it out, okay, they didn't think about it, they got distracted, fine. But when you bring it up, you know, after answering the questions, then they should see, oh yes, okay, I should do like this. Yes, no?
Yes, Mark.
Okay.
Okay. Any human being initiated with Vishnu mantra should not worship the devadas or pitris. The word pitri refers to ancestor lineage of both father and mother. Worship or archana of the pitris means specifically shraddha rites and offering of tarpana. Worship of devatas refers to worship of Ganesha and other demigods. Adi refers to all other activities, either daily, nitya, periodic, naimitika, or for specific material goals, kamya, which generate nama parad. Sankalpa refers to the process of straightening the mind to achieve a particular material goal. Dana refers to charitable activities accompanied by utterance demanding material rewards. The word cha means all other activities contrary to Vaishnava principles. None of these actions should be performed. Someone, however, may object that according to the evidences of Manus Smriti and the other religious scriptures, the human being is responsible for the six kinds of debts, as stated in Vishnu Samhita. Translation, quote, as soon as one takes birth in this material world, one is immediately under the six kinds of rina, or debts, such as deva rina, pitri rina, mitra rina, rishi rina, bhuta rina, Nararina, or the debts to the demigods, to the fathers and mothers, to the friends, to the gurus, to the other living beings, and to the society. One is held responsible to fulfill them. In refutation, this statement doesn't apply to any person of any status inside or outside of Varnashrama who has been initiated with Vaishnava name and mantra by a bona fide guru. For it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41, quote, anyone who has given up all other activities in deference to surrender to Mukunda, most worship surrender, has no debt to the rishis, devatas, bhutas, pitris, relatives, or other human beings. He is not obliged to serve them. Any human being taking initiation with the name and mantra of the Supreme Lord, according to Panchasamskara, from an authorized guru, according to instructions on the highest principles of worship of the Lord, attains steady intelligence and becomes situated in regular worship of the Lord. By this, he becomes fearless. He therefore rejects the daily, periodic, and specialized actions for worldly people as taught in the Vedas, Smritis, and Puranas. As a person overcome by false ego thinks himself the doer, the devotee avoids that danger by avoiding those actions. Mukunda is the only worshipable person, the one and only object of hearing, chanting, service, and prayer. All other worship, being temporary, is useless. Worship of Mukunda alone purifies the heart. The devotee therefore rejects all other actions completely. Neither.
Oh, here, one second.
Okay.
Here. Okay. You have a question?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. Yeah. I have two questions. And the first question is about my parents, our people in Kazakhstan, they usually worship to the ancestors. It's a very popular idea in Kazakhstan and in Middle Ages. And if, for example, they request me to go with them for making the worship into ancestors, can I do it for just for maintaining a relationship with them?
Or yeah, it means if you're there and they expect you to go, you can go along with it. But you know that the forefathers, the potency is all coming from Krishna. It's all the universal form. So the mood of parent, the mood of child, the mood of friend, all these things are moods coming from Krishna. And then you have the forms that they can manifest through. So then we see is that it's Krishna. And so then we're going to see is for us, is that it's the Guru Parampara, and like this, and how Krishna has expanded. So yes, means if they expect you to go, then you go along. It's not a big deal, because we see it all in connection to Krishna. What's being pointed out by the Acharyas, there's no need to do this. So to think that you have to do this, and by doing this, then only you can get the benefit, or the only way then you can be engaged in devotional service, that's wrong. It's offensive, because it's wrong. But for us is that we wouldn't be engaged in it, but if the family's doing it, we happen to be there and expected, you know, socially we take part, then we may. But we always keep in mind that we're seeing it in how it comes context of Krishna consciousness, how it's all Krishna and his expansions. Yes.
And Guru Maharaj, a second question. Devotees our countries, in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan, they requested me to help to preach to local people because they have a lot of different prejudice against Krishna consciousness. It's not ours, it's Indian. And I made one research about that in the ancient time, Tengris was very similar to Vedic culture, and especially we have a lot of evidences in the field of customs, especially it's about worshiping to the ancestors. I mean, rituals are very similar and the ideas are very similar. And I wrote a small book about it for preaching to local people. I started from worshiping to ancestors and the different customs which we have, and finished that we need to read Bhagavad Gita and books of Srila Prabhupada for understanding. So it's like a soft preaching, and I want to ask you, is it okay or it's not good?
It's why not? Mind the point is you're not keeping it within the realm that's there. See, the problem with where soft preaching may have a problem is, let's say, you know, you're using Petri's, but it's then you're showing how it's comparison and the relationship and that, and then bringing up to the higher understanding, or yoga and how it's about meditating on Vishnu. So the most important thing on meditating on Vishnu is chanting the holy names. And so therefore, then we, you know, we situate ourselves how we can best be, you know, chanting, how we can best engage the senses, pull in the senses from what's not useful, engage in what is useful, and be meditating on the Lord. So you're progressing them forward. But generally what I've seen in most soft preaching, they don't want to go beyond the field, because people, let's say in that case, they're interested in yoga. You don't want to take them beyond, you know, the Ashtanga yoga, because then they lose interest. But you have to take them beyond that. Then it actually has some meaning. Otherwise, you just bring up a little bit, you know, okay, nice, great, you know, but at the same time, it doesn't have the weight. I mean, there's not that much time. It's Kali Yuga, you know, anything can happen. So you know, kids are playing on the highway. It's not that you have plenty of time. Does that make sense? So yeah, it can work. It can work.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
You know, I think it was Govinda Maharaj was mentioning, I think he was talking to some you know, prominent person. I think it was in Kazakhstan. I think either a professor or a theologian or something like that. And he was saying that the present mosques are built on the foundations of Buddhist temples. And those Buddhist temples were built on the foundations of Hindu temples.
Yes, we have one monastery of Buddhism in our mountains. And when I talked with our scientists, they said that before Buddhism, it was an ancient Vedic.
You know, and so yes, it's like that. So like that, you can see is like that. You can take things back and just show it's all. At one point, the whole world was. I mean, even you go off into you know, towards the east and all that, you know, over to, you know, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, you know, up there, I think Cambodia and these things like that. You know, you had the biggest Hindu temple in the world, or the biggest Vishnu temple in the world, you know, and biggest place of worship in the world is on that side, I think, in Cambodia. You know, that Angkor Wat, you know, so like that, it's just, it was all over. It's just, it was, every place was like that. It's just with time, it's reduced. That's all. You know, even in our time, we saw that, you know, it had East and West Pakistan, it had Burma, it had Malaysia. I think, you know, farther up like this, it was all connected. And then slowly, slowly, these places have, you know, separated. So it just becomes smaller and smaller. So it eventually, originally was all following the Vedic culture. You know, and if they're complaining, oh no, but it's not our culture to do these and that and chant and all that. So then, I mean, if they're Kazakhs, then okay, they may think it's different. But let's just have some fun here. If they're not living in a yurt and drinking horse milk, then they're not Kazakhs. They're bogus. They say it's not ours. Where did the car come from? Is it a Kazakhstan design? You know, is it a Kazakhstan manufacturing? You know, or it's something American, European, or Japanese, which has nothing to do with their culture. I mean, India is much closer than these things. Where did McDonald's come from? You know, where did the Nike shoes come from? You know, where did all these things that they use in their day-to-day life and quite happily, and then when you bring up this, oh, it's not Kazakh. You know, if they're wearing those shoes that have little curls on the front like that, and, you know, they're wearing a big, you know, thing on their head like that, they ride around on little ponies and have a yurt, okay, now we can talk what's Kazakh. You know, but if that's not there, then it's completely hypocritical. You know, it's like 90% of Western culture they've accepted. And then here you're bringing up something spiritual in that actually has some connection to them and all that. And, oh we can't do that. That's just, what are you talking about? I mean, but you only use that kind of thing if the guys have attitude and are being nasty. Then you can throw this in the face, you know, the cold fish slap. You know, you take a fish and hold it by the tail and slap them across the face. Yeah. So these kind of things like that, then therefore, only if people are unruly, you know, then they could say stuff like this and just stop them and then, you know, like that. And then speak nicely. But if you can speak nicely and not use these techniques, then it's always better. Because otherwise, such persons also easily get offended. Is that okay?
Guru Maharaj, and even I found that the structure, I mean arrangement of yurta is very is based on Vastu Shastra, and all ancient customs are very similar to the 10 Vaishnava Sanskaras.
Yeah. No, you'll find pre-Christianity, the whole world was very similar. You know, there'll be some uniquenesses here and there, but the main principles or main concepts were all very, very similar. Everywhere, every civilization on the planet, you'll find similarities. You know, some more in this way, some more in that way, some more sophisticated, some less. But pre-Christianity, the whole world was like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you.
Yeah. I'm saying in that area, it might be pre-Islam, you know, whatever. But it's just point is Christians came through first. And then after that, then the Islam came through. Okay. Maybe it's G. Thank you, Mike.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
I was saying that I have a question, but I'm not sure. It might take longer than 3 minutes to answer.
Let's see. At least we can try a quick answer.
Well, yeah. So the question is connected to the topic, because here it's mentioned that all those very strict rule of not worshiping any other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead after initiated Vaishnavas. What about if a Brahmana does some ceremonies, you know, like a worship or puja to demigods on behalf of people who are not initiated and those who are not Vaishnavas, are just, you know, anybody, would it be okay?
How do you define okay? Okay means as long as you see it as a way of making money and acknowledge that and understand that you're not doing anything on the spiritual platform, and don't fool yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just like you have I think it was, you know, Lord Chaitanya was going into that area, I think the Sanodiya Brahman. And then he made the point is that, you know, we're Brahmins, but we're considered lower class because we do all the samskars for the Vaishya community. And so therefore, then you take on the Vaishya's karma and stuff like that. So we're not up to the standard of the high grade Brahmins who just do things on a higher level and stuff like that. He was very open and straightforward about that, you know. But because he was a pure devotee, therefore Lord Chaitanya would eat at his house. Otherwise, high-grade Brahmins would never eat at such a Brahmin's house, even though they're a Brahmin. So he's doing these things for these other people, but then now what's he going to do for Prasad? You know, and he's going to take on the karma for doing these things. Because when the Brahmin does these things, the reason he gets paid a dakshina is because he takes the karma. It's not just free money. So that means their materialistic mentality, you do that, then you take that on. So you have to know that that's what you're doing. So if it's understood, that's what you can do. That's where the money is. And you're doing your sadhana like that. But in your worship, when you're worshiping that demigod, you can be worshiping them as the servants of the Lord. Does that make sense? And then offer everything first to Vishnu and then to the demigod. So then what's been offered to Vishnu, that you may accept afterwards. But what's been offered, the portion offered to the demigod, then you would generally avoid. But since you've offered it to them as devotees, it could also be all right. But if others are offering, it's never accepted. That's also. So if it's something that it has to be, it can be, but then somebody has to have that brahminical nature that they have solid sadhana. If they're just a business person and just doing it because it makes money, then they won't last very long. It's literally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like in the West, when devotees have taken it up, you know, do stuff for the Hindus and do all like that, they last about 6 months. then you basically never hear of them anymore. You know, they just kind of merge into the community and don't do those things anymore and just go back kind of not being very serious. So you have to have very serious sadhana. You have to be very honest about the thing and don't think you're being spiritual at all. It means you may be in yours, but what you're giving them is not, you're not, it's an occupation. It's not preaching. Don't call it preaching. Unless you are preaching about how this and that and worship and taking it up and trying to worship the Lord and trying to interest them in that direction and that, and therefore then include in there part of it that, you know, their worship of the Lord and all that, then you're slowly bringing up, then you have an aspect of that. So you have to be real about what it is you're actually doing. Then, yeah, they could do. But I mean, who's qualified to do those brahminical things? You know, as an occupation, you know, a few people might be, but they have to actually have that kind of nature and be able to sustain it. Then you could say, okay, you know, it's like you said, it's okay, not great. But they should also see that they're, you know, their sadhana is going well, they're taking part, they're also doing things for pure Vaishnavas that's, you know, has the proper standing. Then you can do, you know. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Mark.
You know, yeah, so one has to be very careful and be very honest about what's going on. And then generally you'll see is it'll work, then you can survive. Like that. But if you see the consciousness is going down, you're becoming affected and all, then you might consider being very careful about those things. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, so now it's time. So end here, and we can, if there's any more questions on further on this, then we can continue on Thursday. Because, I mean, he's going to be talking about it for a while, you know, like that. We're now around page 18 or something, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I think the whole thing's like 60, 70 pages. So he's going to, from different angles, he's going to deal with it, you know, just to make sure it's very, very clear.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.